Get the Blessing with Bo Mitchell and Bob Belts. Hey, Bo. Good morning.
How are you this morning? Listening to Wild Thing?
You know, a couple of weeks ago, we had Mike Myers on the show, and we're going to have Mike Timnas on the show, and these guys, major league pitchers, and of course, we picked the music to open the show. These were songs either that were their favorite songs or the ones they played when they came in off the field. So when I knew that our guest was going to be here today, I'm thinking, what song just captures the personality of our guest? And the first thing that came to my mind was Wild Thing.
You're so, right. He's got a unique style, and he is a great guy, and people are going to be blessed. So stay right where you are, folks. Sit still. Listen to this program. Bob and I are incredible hosts, but our guest today is even better than we are. He's bigger than he actually is.
That's right. Well, it's, and of course we've had Carl on before, but we wanted to have him on again. And our guest this morning, we welcome you, is Carl Medeiros.
Thanks.
And particularly, we're excited to have you on because we know that you've got a new book that has just come out. I think we talked a little bit about last time you're on the show, but we wanted to have you back. And I think you've got kind of a cool deal coming up that's like a webcast thing and all of that. But first of all, just welcome back. We're glad
Thanks.
To have you.
Great to be here. Great to be had.
Carl, if you were a major league relief pitcher, that is the song you'd want to play while
that's
you're
right.
coming
I
out.
I love it. I love it.
What is your favorite sport?
Favorite sport would be football, college football.
I agree, by the way.
Second would be pro football, but football is the sport to watch for sure. I think it's football.
College football for me, then Major League Baseball.
Okay, right. That'd probably be third. Yeah, that's good. They're all good, though. God likes them all.
Our wives love them, too, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
another game tonight.
That's right.
About as much as they love us, right?
Yeah, great. Hey, so tell us, book. Is it out?
It actually comes out Tuesday, so in 2 days.
Well, actually, by the time people are listening to this on Sunday, it will have been out, I think. So, anyway.
The 26th. No, let's see. No, that's, yeah.
No, wait.
We're all
I'm totally confused.
Yeah, no,
okay.
Actually, I feel more like I do now than I did before.
That's right. I think if it's this Sunday, it comes out the 26th of
okay,
January.
Okay, good.
So
good,
whatever
good.
Day we're
That's on. Tuesday after this Sunday.
That's Tuesday right. after this Sunday.
And where can they people go get it? Like 7-Eleven?
7-Eleven, Quick Mart, and Quick Stop. But you could go in there and ask, but I don't think so. I think they get it at stores like Barnes & Noble's, Borders. You know, they could buy it on this thing called Amazon. You guys ever heard of Amazon?
Yep.
Yeah, little internet thing. So that works. I mean, just wherever you buy books, you can buy it, and you should buy it.
Okay, Tea with Hezbollah.
Sitting at the enemy's table. Sitting at the enemy's table. You almost have to add the subtitle. Otherwise, you're going, Tea with Hezbollah. What in the world is that?
I think it's a great title.
It is a good title.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I would have looked at that and thought, wow.
You
know,
buy it. Well,
somebody ought to buy this, not me.
Supposedly, here's a little ins and out. Yeah, somebody else. Yes. Here's the ins and out of publishing. Doubleday supposedly bought. And this is how this works. I never knew this until like 2 weeks ago. The publisher, if they have money and they want to spend money on the book, they buy. They basically like, buy an airtime on a radio show. Different slots cost different money. Like this one's probably really cheap. Sorry.
Yeah, this is the right price, Carl.
That was a joke.
That's right.
But you know they buy spots on like a Barnes & Noble. So like when you walk in Barnes & Nobles or Borders or one of those big you know chain bookstores and you see a bunch of books right when you walk in.
Yeah.
I always wondered how those guys get their books up there. I just assumed it was you know bigger author better spot.
Me too.
They buy it. The publisher buys that spot.
Like a grocery store shelf.
Absolutely.
Space.
That's why all of my books are right by the men's room, just sort of a little corner.
No.
Anyway,
don't say that. So, what do you hope happens when someone reads Tea with Hezbollah?
Okay, now, first of all, I know we talked about this before, but there's a lot of people listening that probably didn't hear you before, so tell the story too.
Well, just real quick, I mean, we can unpack it as much as you guys want, but let's see if I can do the 1 minute version.
I'd like to retract my question.
You'd like to retract your question?
Just forget it.
Retraction accepted.
We'll get back to that later.
I'd like to retract all of my comments about when the book comes out.
And when we're doing this and all that kind of stuff. So, and we can apologize for things we're going to say later in the show as well.
Yeah,
right
we're
now.
Bound. I'm bound to
we're sorry.
Yeah, mess something else
we're all
up.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Tea with Hezbollah. Tell us what it's about.
So myself and an author friend named Ted Decker actually took a 3 week trip around the Middle East. Last year, and went to Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Israel and the Palestinian territories. And we met with the leaders of those countries, political leaders, religious leaders, about 30 of them, and we interviewed all of them. And this book is the process. It's not just the interviews, although the interview is verbatim. Actually, it's interesting. They're real time, real places, real names. Only one person in the book, and you might see why once you find out who that is, only one person in the book didn't want his actual name used. But even so, we used real time, real place, real organization that he was with. Everybody else allowed us to use their names. So like Bin Laden brothers, Osama Bin Laden's brothers in Saudi Arabia, the Mufti of Mecca, the Mufti of Jerusalem. Mufti is like a bishop or like a cardinal in the Catholic Church would be probably kind of the top dog in the Muslim world for that country.
I'm the Mufti of Centennial,
You're
by the way.
You're kind of a Mufti.
Yeah.
You look a little Mufti-ish, actually. Right.
How do you spell Mufti?
M-U-F-T-I.
Kind of like it sounds.
Just kind of like it sounds. Mufti.
So you met
The top Shiite leader in the world and the head of the Hezbollah and the leaders of the Hamas and all these kind of bad guy organizations. We were basically on a trip to find out a couple of things. One is, are they really bad guys? And it was kind of mixed results on that end. Two, are they human beings? Are they actually in any way human? So we're not trying to legitimize what they're doing or who they are, but just are they human? And then finally, thinking about the parable of the Good Samaritan that Jesus tells, which was using the Samaritan, which wasn't good. I mean, there's no such thing as a good Samaritan, right? You know, 2,000 years ago, they were bad guys. So would it be kind of like a good Muslim today, the parable of the good Muslim, maybe? And so what does that mean? You know, are there some good Muslims doing great things in the Middle East and the Arab world that we don't know about? They're actually rescuing and serving us who we, you know, of course, we think we're the good guys. Let's just say for fun, we are the good guys. Are there some Muslims that are being good Samaritans towards us? And who are they? So we actually found three guys in the Middle East that are doing incredible things, a Palestinian Christian, Arab Muslim, and an Israeli Jew. So a Christian, a Muslim, and a Jew that are doing incredible things, actually serving the countries that they're in and their neighbors and even serving their enemies in that region in profound ways. So the book is pretty provocative. It's exciting. It reads well. Ted did most of the writing. I set up the interviews and the trip. Ted's a great writer. He writes fiction novels typically. This is his first nonfiction book. It reads like a novel. It reads well.
Yeah, it does.
You read it, didn't you?
I've read it, yeah. You know,
And by the way, Bob wrote a recommendation that really kind of makes the book.
I think it's kind of the most profound, you know, insight of anyone that recommended
the book. It's the strangest quote I've ever seen on any book cover. It says,
"You must read this book.
Whatever you do, don't read this book."
Yeah, I mean, that was
Bob's quote.
One phrase out of I thought a really kind of a cool, you know.
It was very cool.
I wrote all about you.
I know.
And actually, you know, because I think the images were, you know, you think truth is stranger than fiction, you know. Sometimes reality is more exciting than, you know, adventure. But, you know, again, for the sake of those that might not have heard you on our earlier shows, how in the world do you get access to the kind of guys you got access to?
You know, you Google them and then send them an email.
That's right.
Dear sir.
Tell them a little bit about how you've gotten into some of these.
I'm probably one removed. We lived in Beirut, Lebanon for 12 years, and I've kind of worked in and out of the Middle East since 1983. So for quite a while, what is that, 27 years or so, since I was 21 years old. So yes, I'm 48. Bo.
Young.
Much younger than you guys. Mm-hmm. Much.
I'm 60, and they say.
They say, really?
Get your affairs in order, Bo.
So I know the Middle East well. We lived in Beirut for 12 years. So I either would, I probably didn't know any of the people personally, but I was one removed from everyone we met, actually. It just kind of so happened that I actually found a guy somewhere in these seven different countries that knew the person we wanted to meet with. And then we just asked him for an interview, and we just said, we're writing a book. It's going to be called Tea with Hezbollah, Sitting at the Enemy's Table. And it's going to be to Americans, and we're going to explain what you guys think. You're free to say whatever you want. We're not going to twist your words, we promise. We actually ran the manuscript by each one. Like, the Hezbollah guy was really worried that we were going to take what he said and then make it say something else, which, you know, often happens in reporting and stuff. So we actually send it back to them. And we didn't send what we wrote about it, but we sent their interview. So did you, in fact, say these words? They said yes. We published it just like it is. And so they appreciated that. So because of that, we got 100% participation. Nobody said no to our request, actually. It's interesting.
You know, some of the stories are just, again, getting in to these guys. What's amazing? You know, what what is, like, you know, in your mind, one of the kind of wildest set of circumstances that got you in to see some of these guys, or even, you know, prior to this, because you've had some amazing experiences over
there?
Yeah,
probably the most difficult one that we almost had, and then we turned down, was Gaddafi of Libya. We actually got a meeting with not President Gaddafi, what do they call him? The great leader is what Libyans would call Gaddafi, Colonel Gaddafi, or the big guy, I think. And so we got a meeting with him, and we actually worked really hard. We actually worked hardest on that meeting. And then just because of all the rest of the meetings, the way they worked out, we actually had to cancel. We actually had already bought our tickets to fly into Libya, and that change cost us, you know, a lot of money and a lot of frustration and a lot of embarrassment. So Gaddafi is probably off my best friend list now. Yeah, sorry about that. So that one was probably the most interesting, just in the sense that it didn't happen, but we tried so hard to make it happen. You know, Ted, the other guy, Ted Decker, who some of you probably know, read some of his fiction stuff, he was incredibly nervous the whole time. You wouldn't remember this probably unless you're a real news junkie, but Hezbollah actually took over the country of Lebanon. And they did that the day before we got on the plane from the States here, from Colorado, to fly over there. The day before we started the trip, Hezbollah took over the country. And so we're in Egypt, we're in Saudi Arabia, the airport shut down. Ted's making me promise not to fly there. Carl, we can't fly. I've promised my wife, we can't go there, you know. And it was crazy. It was in total chaos. And interestingly, the day that we were supposed to fly there from Saudi, that exact day was the day they reopened the airport. Hezbollah kind of stood down, pulled back. And we were the first flight, as far as I know, we were the first flight back into the Lebanese airport, the Beirut airport. And Ted was fighting mad at me because he felt like I tricked him, which of course I had. I mean, in a godly way, of course, but I had tricked him. And because he kept saying, Carl, promise me. I'm like, I promise you, if it's not safe, we will not go. He's like, no, don't say if it's not safe. Just promise me we won't go. I promise you, Ted, if it's not safe, we won't go. I mean, for sure, if it's not safe, we won't go. Yeah, but safe to you and safe to me are different words. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, the word safe is safe. They won't kill us and mince us up into little pieces, so it's safe. I mean, what else could they do? They throw us in jail. I mean, who cares? What, you know, that doesn't. So anyway, I mean, I've been in jail lots of times in the Middle East, but never for the gospel, never for Jesus, never for our faith, always for misunderstandings politically, because they're mad at somebody or they think they're mad at America or whatever, and they got an American, so they're going to put him in jail. But that's so funny. Arab hospitality kicks in, and they always ask you if they want a shawarma or a falafel. You know, because they're so hospitable. Even in jail, we were fed so well. I mean, so well. It's hilarious, isn't it? Here we are in jail, and the Arabs are all just taking. I've been in jail in Saudi Arabia, and Iraq, Lebanon.
So your familiarity with the region is what made you so peaceful about, hey, I'm not going to do anything here, Ted. That's too crazy. So just bear with me. And
I did feel comfortable. I mean, I can't imagine that anything would have happened. But then I think that part of my brain isn't really wired well anyway. So
it's wired differently, let me tell you.
Differently. Sure.
But you didn't feel like you were on top of the temple getting ready to dive off?
No.
Putting God to some foolish test?
No. And probably the most... Probably the weirdest interview we had was with the Mufti of Jerusalem. So he's the guy that preaches every Friday. You know, Muslims' holy day is Friday, Jews do Saturday, Christians do Sunday, just so we don't have the same day, so we can keep competition going.
We should share buildings, you know.
We should. We could, because we could. We could totally do that. You have a building. Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and do that?
Yeah, I think I might.
Why don't you go ahead and do that? Let me know how that goes. So the Mufti of Jerusalem, you know, is the guy that preaches every Friday at the Dome of the Rock Mosque, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is on this very controversial piece of real estate, the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And he was a little wacky, to be honest. I mean, most of the guys we met, we found, were pretty normal. They're regular guys.
Be careful, because we heard he listens to this show on Sundays.
I think the Mufti of Jerusalem does listen. On internet, of course. But yeah, he does listen in.
When he's driving in Denver.
When he's driving. I don't think he can get a visa.
How is he?
Go ahead.
Well, he was just kind of goofy. I mean, I want to be honoring to these people. They're mostly my friends and people that I actually love and in many ways respect and want to share our life and our faith with and whatever. But he was just a little wacky. He said some outrageous things about even scientific things. I don't know what his deal was. He's getting a little old. Maybe he's senile. I'm not sure. He was pretty hard on Israel. as you might guess. Now, the other, interestingly, the other Palestinians that we interviewed weren't so much. Even the Hamas guy wasn't as you would expect, but the Mufti of Jerusalem was a little wacky. Mm. And so we had probably 3 hours with him. We prayed with him, prayed for him. Actually, that's one of the things we always do is we ask the Muslim, can we pray for you? Not just with you, but can we pray for you? They always said yes. Every single one said yes. Most of the time, Ted and I, and if we were with somebody else, we'd gather around him, actually lay hands on, kind of put our hand on their shoulder and pray for him. He let us do that and was very thankful. But he was just kind of funny. I mean, I don't think his theology, even his Muslim theology, wasn't very good. Hmm. There's a couple times where he'd say things I knew weren't in the Quran, and I would say, actually, but sir, that's not in the Quran. He said, yes, 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 I know, but those are details. Well, yeah, but you just quoted the Quran, and it's not in there. I know, but whatever, you know, Quran, Hadith, whatever. And so I was like, wait, you're a Mufti. You can't be just saying whatever.
Oh, God. This is You Get the Blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell. Bob Belts is hosting today, and our guest is Carl Medeiros, and we're talking about a new book being released this week called Tea with Hezbollah, Sitting at the Enemy's Table.
Got it.
So Bob was just asking about some of the specific incredible moments you experienced as you were writing this book, and we were hearing about the Mufti of Jerusalem. Hmm. You're appointed for life if you're the Mufti of Jerusalem.
You know, I don't even know how that works. I can't figure out how it works even with like a regular sheikh or imam, like the guy that leads the mosque. It's not very clear whether they vote on you or like the head of a district appoints you. And I've asked lots of Muslims that question, and I get you know, different answers. So.
Lest we forget, and in the midst of these great stories too, tell us about the event you've got coming.
The web thingy event. Yeah. This coming Thursday night, so the 28th at 6 o'clock, 6 o'clock here Mountain Time. We're actually doing the event in Colorado Springs. We're having a live webcast, which I've never done before, and it was a lot more technical and confusing and. You know, over my head than I thought, like most things I do. I always go into things thinking, oh, this will be easy. It'll be great with just some friends. We'll hang out, have some coffee, and do a little webcast thing. But it actually cost a lot of money and was pretty high tech. So it's called, the website that leads you to that webcast is called whydoyoufearme.com. So why do you fear me? So it kind of has a kind of half of a Muslim guy's face on the website. It's obviously a Muslim kind of asking us, why do you fear me? And so we're dealing a lot with the issue of fear. So it's going to be Ted Decker and I, the two authors of Tea with Hezbollah, and then another friend, the former governor of South Carolina. I have to be careful that I say the former governor of South Carolina, not the current one. David Beasley, also a good friend, has traveled with us to the Middle East, was with me there 2 months ago, back in November. And so he'll be on the webcast as well. And he's been real involved in the Middle East for years. That's why he's doing it. And we're going to do about 45 minutes of just talking about the Middle East. We're going to try and explain simple things like what's the difference between Hamas, Hezbollah, and Al-Qaeda. I mean, honestly, to me, that's very simple. I mean, the differences are many and they're very obvious. But for most people, you'd have no idea. You just call them terrorists.
Right.
Or even just those Muslims or those Muslim terrorists or whatever. So, you know, what are the differences? Are those differences significant? Does it matter? Who cares? Why should we care?
Give us a taste. What are the differences?
I'll give you a taste right now. So, for instance, Hamas and Hezbollah, they both start with the letter H. That's where the similarities end. The Hezbollah are all Shiite Muslims. By definition, if you're Hezbollah, you're Shiite and you're Lebanese. They're only in Lebanon and they're all Shiite. And they would say, so hear me carefully, they would say they're freedom movement, freedom fighters in Lebanon fighting for the integrity of the Lebanese land. They're not out to kill anybody else or drive anybody into the sea or whatever. That's what they would say. You can think whatever you want, but that's what they would say. Whereas the Hamas are all Sunni Muslims, 100% Sunni Muslims, and 100% Palestinian, mostly in Gaza these days, but some in the West Bank, the Palestinian areas. And they would also say they are fighting for what was their land, that land of Israel / Palestine. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a little controversy over that land over there, you know, these days. So the Hamas and Hezbollah are two different Muslim groups. One's Shiite, one's Hamas, or Sunni, and one's Lebanese and one's Palestinian. All Hamas are all Palestinian. You don't find any Hamas in Iraq or anywhere else. And Al-Qaeda is kind of the fuzzy term that really we started to use before bin Laden started to use to define anybody, any Muslim who is a bad guy. And they are, I would actually say, Al-Qaeda are the true blue terrorist. If you're part of Al-Qaeda, you've joined an organization to fight the West, maybe specifically Israel and or America, which they kind of see as one entity. And those are the actual bad guys. The Hamas and Hezbollah, depends on who they are, could also be bad guys. But if you're Lebanese, you're going to love the Hezbollah. And if you're Palestinian, you might like the Hamas. It's about 50-50 between the two groups, the Fatah, Arafat's old party, and the Hamas. Hamas are more fundamentalist in their Islamic views. The Fatah is more liberal but more corrupt. So the poor Palestinian is going to choose a corrupt but more open-minded Fatah, which will steal all the money given to them by the West, or a more integrous, religious Hamas, but that's more fundamentalist in their beliefs towards Israel. So the poor average Palestinian guy, Joe Ahmed, living in East Jerusalem, gets to choose between corruption and fundamentalism for their political choices. And that's actually the way it is. So it's not simple.
And you kind of throw into that mix, too, the fact that I know you've got good friends there in the region that are actually Christians.
Right.
And not only Christians, but pastors and,
Absolutely.
Kind of a part of that whole mix that most of us aren't very familiar with. But,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it seems to me like the biggest issue that we have here, though, the reason why we call the website Why Do You Fear Me is because I think most American Christians, most Americans in general, whether you're a follower of Jesus or not, or a cultural Christian, Catholic, Protestant, whatever, if you're American, you probably are afraid of Muslims in general. And you would think there are some reasons for that that are legitimate, and there are. I mean, obviously 9/11 was the big one, and that's a real reason. So if a fire burst out right here, we jump back, your heart rate increases, you're afraid. And that's normal fear. But I think there's a potential fear that we're afraid of. So Muslims might do something. What if they're taking over the West? What if there's another terrorist attack? These are all potential fears. And living your life in the midst of potential fear, especially as a believer, somebody who loves God and follows Jesus, is foolish at best. And it makes you unable to love that person. So if you're afraid of your neighbor, let's think your physical neighbor in your house next door to you, you kind of notice once in a while they walk between windows and they have a hood or whatever, or they look kind of scary, and then you become afraid of them, you're not likely to take your neighbor some cookies or invite them to a barbecue if you're afraid of them. So we have to get over our fear. We have to, before we can love anybody, whoever those people are, we have to get over our fear.
I admire about you, Carl, that you've taken very complicated topics, and because of the style God's given you and the knowledge and conversational, relaxed approach, made them seem very easy, which I think is so needed right now. I know I need it. I need to get on board with this webcast. So as we're closing out, talk about how people can support your organization, how we can make sure folks are listening to the webcast.
Yeah, I mean, the webcast thing is simple. Just go to whydoyoufearme.com. So it's all one word. Those five words are one word. Why do you fear me as one word.
And when is it again?
It's this coming Thursday, the 28th of January.
Okay.
So just go to that, and it will direct you how to sign up. You can also buy Tea with Hezbollah through the website if you want to, or you can just buy it however you want to, or not buy it at all, of course. And then I have a website as well called carlmedeiros.com. I know that's pretty exciting, but if you can just remember my name and somehow remember how to spell me, dear, is, then you can find carlmedeiros.com. And there's lots of stuff on there about my take on the Middle East, about the Muslim thing. I have 10 myths about the Muslim world, 10 myths about the Middle East.
I've read that.
You've read those stuff about how to follow Jesus, how to communicate things of the gospel.
That is so phenomenal, by the way.
Yeah.
Your presentation.
And that's my passion, really. The passion isn't really Muslims. I mean, we live in Denver now. So the passion is, how do you communicate Jesus to people who don't want to hear about him, or you thought didn't want to hear about him?
If you're flinching on how to communicate Jesus, honestly, look up carlmedeiros.com and go to that. The 10 myths is great, but also just sharing Christ is wonderful. Who helped write that with you?
That was just me, all by myself.
I can't believe that.
Some of that's in your other book, too, which is great.
Yeah, the other book, Muslims, Christians, and Jesus, is that one as well. So,
Well, good. Thanks. Thanks for coming on. And again, we hopefully, if you're listening out there, we encourage you to kind of tap into these things and buy the book. I've read the book. It is just an amazing story. And again, it's better than most fiction for sure.
Right.
And thanks for being on.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. It's fun.
See you next time, Carl, and see you all next week here on 850 KOA. Thanks for being with us.